new year. Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa that shape our community. I am one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, with two other co-hosts. We have a full house today. Pat Schlarbaum is here with me this morning, as well as Kay Potok. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Ursula. And today on Local Talk, we'll be discussing woodpeckers. That includes an amazing story of the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Okay.
This bird has been thought to be extinct for a half century, yet continues to live on in stories and sightings in its native habitat of vast forest resources in Southeast America and possibly Cuba. And later in the hour, we will hear from Susan Guasta, a public relations officer for the City of Ames. Susan will be giving us her monthly report. But first, Ursula, we've got a report from Kay Puttick about New Year's resolutions.
Yes, Kay. Yesterday I went to Cafe Diem for a cup of coffee downtown here in Ames, and the tip jars were two questions. Did I make a New Year's resolution, and did I not make a New Year's resolution? So they let me count the tips in each jar, and the tip jar that said I did not make a New Year's resolution had zero money in it.
Wow.
And the tip jar that said I made a New Year's resolution had $8.75 in it.
So
that's a little mini survey that I was able to take about New Year's resolutions.
In other words, people are either really making resolutions or they won't admit that they're not.
So is it in fact true that we should each say what our New Year's resolutions are?
Well, I'm not sure. It depends. Maybe we shouldn't, at least not right away, and not on demand and not by surprise. Like, for example, Pat, if you weren't expecting this question and you haven't, in fact, had time to think about it.
Well, I have.
You should. Oh, good. Oh. Okay. Well, maybe we'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
But not right away, and maybe not in the way people usually think about resolutions.
I see an explanation coming. Please explain.
I've been looking into it. And since the time when people first started making New Year's resolutions, a lot of research has been done by psychologists on the subject of fulfilling your good intentions, fulfilling your resolutions.
Good intentions.
And how do you fulfill them, though? That's the point. And probably the most important single finding is that willpower has a physical basis, which can be strengthened like a muscle and tired by depletion of glucose in the brain. So if you have to spend the day, restraining yourself from losing your temper with bad-tempered people, at the end of the day, you've got very little willpower left to do anything.
Or you've developed the philosophy.
Build up the muscle.
Yeah.
So to keep our resolutions, we need to get enough sleep, eat wisely, and, for example, be especially careful not to expose ourselves to temptation when we're feeling tired or hungry at the end of the day. And we should think carefully about what resolutions we make and how and when we make them. As well as looking at some of the research, I also spoke briefly with some local experts on this subject. And their advice, though brief, I just asked them for a few quick comments, certainly fits in with what I've been able to learn about recent research. Let's listen to these reports now.
Okay.
The first clip is from counselor and coach Keith Schrag.
My suggestion, Kay, is that our best New Year's resolutions are made when we make them when we're clear-headed and when we speak from the heart. If we speak under compulsion or when we're upset or under the influence of something or someone else, then we're not really clear-headed and don't speak from the heart. And so when we speak from the heart with a clear head, and make only those resolutions that we fully intend to keep, we have the greatest possibility of making a resolution or resolutions that then actually have some possibility of being carried out, because our full spirit, our full soul, our full heart is behind that intention.
Right. So does that imply that probably just making one because it happens to be the 1st of January is not a good idea?
Precisely.
And the second clip might seem perhaps to agree with that, because it also plays down the idea of resolutions in the traditional sense. This is from the Reverend Kent McCusick, who's the minister at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames.
If you feel compelled to make a resolution, it makes sense to do something that really you can integrate into your lifestyle rather than make it something that you have to work really hard for. Little changes are easier to maintain and sustain throughout the year rather than shoot for the moon and be disappointed and fail in a week. That's my best advice.
And the final clip is retired therapist Kay Berger, and what she says also seems to agree that New Year's resolutions in the traditional sense are perhaps not a good idea. She also stresses the importance of making lists.
The first thing that I'd like to say is it's very, very difficult to keep resolutions, and so I don't do it. I have a list that I made about a year ago, a list of things that I wanted to do in the near future. And so I look at this list. My resolutions are only one this year, and that is to finish the book I've been writing for 20 years. I've got it in an editor, and that's possible. It wasn't possible last year, so I just put it on my list this year to do. Our lists are usually, I've tried doing it, are usually very large, like lose weight or sort through all those photos or exercise more, a lot of those things that we probably should be doing anyway. So I go through my to-do list. The other thing, every day I have a to-do list, and I make it at night, and I put on that list 1, 2, 3, 4, however many, and I put down what I'm going to do that day or the next day because I make it the night before. But that works out well for me to just make not a New Year's resolution, but kind of a resolution for that day. Then in the morning when I wake up, I look at it and I sort of meditate to make sure that this is what I want to do. I don't have to do it all, but this is a way that we can get through our one day at a time resolutions by not having a success-failure kind of a system. I think when we're looking at a list like this, the worst thing is procrastination. Mm-hmm. And we all have it. And one of the ways that I've found to do that is if I want to put off something on my list, I just do it.
Get it off.
Get it off the list.
Get it off the list by doing it, yeah.
Yes, that works out really well.
Those local experts and the current research all agree that we should reduce stress and make sure we have a chance to succeed with our resolutions, whether at New Year or any other time, by setting realistic, achievable goals. And we should budget and look after our willpower rather than try to use it as a last-ditch defense. Kay Berger talked about how important lists of goals are. She has short-term daily goals and longer-term goals like finishing her book. And all the research I've had time to look at certainly agrees that we need both types of goal, long-term, short-term, and so on. Kay Berger and the research I've read all stress the importance of avoiding procrastination, which is pretty obvious, by putting tasks you might tend to put off at the top of your priority list and rewarding yourself afterwards. So, for example, instead of saying, I'll have my coffee before I clean out the cellar, you say, I'll clean out the cellar for 1 hour, then I'll reward myself with a coffee break. Kay also mentioned that she reviews her daily goals in the morning, that is, when she's rested and when her willpower will be stronger. The Reverend McCusick stressed the importance of smaller, achievable goals. An example of that would be to quit smoking. Rather than trying to do it all at once, you reduce the number of cigarettes you smoke in a day. In other words, you one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And then if you keep that up for a week, the next week you reduce the number more and so on. Mm-hmm. Keith Schrag stressed the importance of setting goals with a clear head from the heart. That's another way of saying what the research seems to say, which is that we should be very thoughtful and reflective in the way we actually set our goals. We should get our lives in perspective. We should ask ourselves, am I where I want to be in life? What could be better? Where do I want to be next year in my steps to achieve this goal? Where do I want to be? What are the small steps towards that goal next month, next year, next week? And you should do this, you know, monthly, weekly. We should review our goals on a yearly basis, in other words. But it could be, for example, on our birthday rather than at the new year. For example, the new year might have too many bad associations, associations with failing or failing in the past. But if it's got good associations, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So, Ursula, I have to say that personally, I can tell you my resolution when I've had a lot more time to think about it after I've read all this research.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you, Kay, for starting off the new year with some psychological preparation. And we are here to strengthen community by building community through communication at KHOI. And we are your hosts today. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Kay Patak and Pat Schlarbaum. We're out in full force today to start off the year right. And we are now going to talk about woodpeckers. Thank you, Pat, for coming in and talk to us about these birds, which we do see in our backyards.
Well, it's a great time of year to enjoy the woodpeckers, primarily species that will come to your backyard or your front yard. Feeders, they like black oil sunflower seeds. And I like to recommend that people kind of get that oriented in their thoughts, because the mixtures, we always think there's a lot of different kinds of birds, but the mixtures have so much waste that's included, and they really are seeking the black oil sunflower. So I like to recommend that.
By mixtures, you mean the bird seed mixtures that
right,
one buys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people have the, you know, illusion that there's a wide range of birds, so I need a wide range of foods. And the blue jays primarily will kick out all the other millets and grains and all the different things just to get those black oil sunflowers. So I like to be kind of frugal with – and there is a spoilage issue. So if you've got wet and rotty grain beneath your feeder, you probably need to keep that a little tidier. So that's kind of why I go to that. But woodpeckers like the suet. They're suet cakes. They like any type of fat. But I like to recommend – getting these things established in October and November. There's red-bellied woodpeckers that'll be coming around. There's downy woodpeckers. If you've got some woodlands associated with your home, there could possibly be a hairy woodpecker, and they are just a little bit larger cousin to the downies. That I hope the listeners are familiar with these birds. If not, a good golden bird guide is always a good asset to have. So the red-bellied, and there are red-headed woodpeckers that come by occasionally, but suet is a great product for the woodpeckers. I've also got a recipe I'd like to suggest that started with my mom. She was always cooking bacon and had all this bacon grease, and she started mixing one part of grease with four parts of cornmeal, and Crisco or any type of other shortening will suffice for the bacon grease. But if you mix 4 to 1, 4 parts cornmeal, 1 part grease, and mix in a little peanut butter just to get some consistency, you can end up with a mixture that you can press into a log or in the bark. There's different feeders around. I'm like about a 5-inch log that has 1-inch holes drilled in it, and you can pack those holes full of this mixture, and particularly red-bellied woodpeckers, they just love it.
Hmm. Oh, that's a good idea to try.
So, Pat, well, when we post the show today on the website, will you include that recipe on the website so
My
somebody
pleasure.
Wants to try it out?
Yeah, and okay. I recommend it.
Okay.
But there are some. I started to say there are some red-headed woodpeckers around the bigger woods. They can come in for the black oil sunflower, but they're probably one woodpecker that might be challenging to get mm-hmm. coming to your feeders, but not to leave it out. But this brings us to the migratory woodpeckers. There's a yellow-bellied sapsucker. And they're the ones, if you've ever seen a row of dots in a lot of times in the cedar trees, the sapsuckers will make these series of holes and then sip the nectar or the sap that comes in those holes. So you can see those during the migration. But the one I really like to emphasize this morning are the pileated woodpeckers. We'll do a follow-up with this because they have arrived in the Ledges State Park. They're a big woodpecker, I guess the woody woodpecker of the woodpecker world, loud calls. And they go after ants and things in dead and dying trees, and it'll just shred the bark. The holes are just amazing when you see what these pileated woodpeckers can do.
Pat, what exactly is a woodpecker doing when it pecks on a tree?
Well, one thing it's doing in the spring is it's part of its courtship, and there's drumming that the males will get established. And if you've got soffits or things that are hollow, they may not be particularly after any insects or any caterpillars that might be under your siding, but they like a resinous bam, 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 bam.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's insect. I once had a house where there was a woodpecker, and I assumed I had, I don't know, termites in there or something. But that's not that. I did manage to get rid of it.
Well, there may be some insect issues, but in the spring, quite often, it's just their territorial drumming.
And so it's instead of singing.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. They've got defense calls. But
they're drummers, not singers.
They're drummers and not singers. That's a good way. That's a good way to look at it. But they're just a great. And a guild would be all the cousins that I mentioned of woodpeckers. So they're just a great suite of birds to have in our surroundings. And they're the primary excavators. So there's some chickadees and nuthatches, and there's other songbirds, bluebirds, for instance, that rely on those woodpeckers to make the holes.
Uh-huh.
And the woodpeckers kind of move on, especially northern flickers are kind of another one that
And what do they do? What do the little birds do with the holes?
They can nest them.
Well, the smaller birds, that's their nesting cavity. They're called secondary cavity nesting birds. So they require a primary, a woodpecker, to make them a home, and then they go from there. And people can put out the nest boxes, and there's artificial structures that kind of add to that outreach. And I really have to say, if you're fortunate to attract some black-capped chickadees, you'll have the most fun in the world watching them mature. They start off as like as little miniature adults, and they're just cute as bug's ears. And they'll be six or seven packed into this nest box. And it's good for young and old alike. But this brings us to probably our largest woodpecker, the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Uh-huh.
And I want to kind of share some of the thoughts with this bird. It's a mythological bird, practically. People are trying to locate its areas of territory in the southwest United States, primarily the big timbers that are associated with the Mississippi River flyway. They're called riparian corridors, but there's literally areas that have thousands of acres of woodlands, and not a lot of people go there. And occasionally somebody will come up with, oh, I've got the ivory-billed woodpecker, and it's so large. It's maybe half again bigger than these pileated. So it's larger than a crow, about a 3-foot wingspan.
Hmm.
And as people have studied their it decline, they need these big woodlands. The Second World War was pretty hard on those woodlands, and that was about the last that they knew of a stable population nesting in our large forest tracts in southeast United States. So since that time, there's periodic sightings. There was one in 2004 particularly that got everybody all a Twitter, and it has not been able to be confirmed. But I was fortunate to have an opportunity to interview a researcher, Aaron Breeze, who is an attorney for the Department of Natural Resources. And Aaron was one of the volunteers that went to Arkansas in 2005 to try and see this mythological bird, and they are so amazing that usually the first utterance is, Lord God, what a bird. So they call them the Lord God birds, of all things. And so I hope the listeners find this entertaining.
Well, Aaron Breeze, welcome to Local Talk.
Thanks, Pat.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Well, let's start with a little of your background. You work with the Department of Natural Resources.
That's right.
And you're with the legal department.
Yes, I'm an attorney in the department's legal bureau.
And I particularly appreciate your noonday bird sightings. So you're an active birder.
That's right. I've been birding in Iowa since 1994.
And just to let the listeners know, Aaron Breeze is unequaled. A gift to the birding community and exceptional sightings and things that you've shared.
That's a bit of an exaggeration, but thank you.
Okay, well, what is your favorite bird?
I love gulls. I love shorebirds. There's a lot of diversity in those groups.
Uh-huh.
Hard to identify. They're a challenge.
And growing up, I guess we did not see gulls like we see in the current era.
That's right, yeah. The big Army Corps reservoirs have really changed things. And yeah.
Well, let's talk about woodpeckers.
Okay.
Today, we're seeing and hearing where I work on the Des Moines River Flyway at the ledges. We have this bird. It sounds like it's the jungle. And I guess I'm describing that. Wah, 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 wah.
Right.
And of the pileated woodpeckers. Do you recall your first ever seeing a pileated woodpecker?
I'm sure that would have been in the early to mid-90s down at Stevens State Forest, down in Lucas County.
So they're a forest bird.
Yeah, big forests, forests along rivers.
Could you describe a pileated?
Yeah, they're black with white patches on the underwings and red on the heads, and they have a crest, and they're huge. They're, you know, about the size of a crow.
Yeah.
And as you were describing, they're extremely loud. You can hear them calling back and forth at each other for a huge distance.
Yeah, they do get your attention.
Yeah.
And I think when people hear it, they're like, oh, it sounds like I'm in the jungle.
Right.
Yeah. They bring a lot to our woodlands. I guess the woody woodpecker,
yeah,
if you will, of the woodpecker world. And we've got red-headed woodpeckers. People in their backyards, they may see downy woodpeckers, hairy woodpeckers. Maybe in the migration, some yellow-bellied sapsuckers. So there's quite a guild of woodpeckers. And we have a situation where one of our woodpeckers last documented in the Mississippi Flyway, and I'm referring to the ivory-billed woodpeckers.
Right.
Could you give us a little background on those guys?
Sure. Ivory-billed was somewhat like a big version of the pileated. You know, they had a big crest and was a really big bird, but substantially bigger than a pileated. It was the largest woodpecker in the United States.
Like a 2-foot wingspan, maybe
yeah.
Three?
Yeah.
They're huge.
They're huge, yeah. It's hard to imagine a bird that size nesting in a tree cavity. They're just so large. And they were found all across the southeast, from the southern North Carolina, all along the coast down to Florida, and then west into Texas, into eastern Texas. And then they, like you're saying, they came up the Mississippi River a ways, and they were, you know, birds of the huge swamp forests and pine forests of the southeast that are
literally thousands of acres.
Right, which just didn't no longer exist in their, you know, kind of primeval state. They were all logged early in the last century.
Okay,
and
so logging, loss of habitat,
and apparently a lot of, you know, they were, ivory bills were a big target. A lot of them were collected or probably just casually shot, and you know, those things combined with that wide scale logging of those forests led to people thinking they were extinct even by, you know, 1900 or so, and a few hung on in Florida, and then And then in Louisiana, where the last little breeding population was known, and that was in the 1930s into the last few into the 1940s, and that was.
Yeah, and reading about this bird, I understand the Second World War, pretty challenging on the resources, needed a lot of wood.
Right.
We had to make a lot of ammunition boxes and those type of things. After the Second World War, increasingly rare, were there, at that time, did people think they were possibly extinct?
You know, it depends who you talk to. Yeah. There, at that point, when that last spot in Louisiana called the Singer Tract was logged off in the 40s, there was no location where anyone could go and find one. There was no spot left where they were known to nest, and there were no confirmed sightings after those birds finally disappeared. There have always been people who thought they saw one. There have always been people who have been looking for them. But, of course, the fact that we have another large black and white woodpecker with a crest flying around all over the South.
The pileated.
It makes every sighting questionable because it can be a pileated.
Yeah, these sightings, they've taken on kind of a life of their own in manifestations where the bird, the ivory-billed woodpecker, referred to as the Good Lord bird.
Yeah.
I guess a lot. Anybody who saw one or thought they were seeing or hearing one, one of the first thoughts would be, Lord God Almighty, what a bird.
Yeah.
So it was the Good Lord bird,
yeah,
or the Lord God bird. So so there's people that are kind of latching on to this. Can you bring us up into the 21st century? Have there been any suspicion sightings and...
Yeah, so it kind of again goes back to who you want to believe and who you think is a reliable observer. There have always been sightings over the decades that were suggestive or couldn't be easily discounted, but never any proof. And then we came to 2004 when Cornell announced that the ivory bill had been rediscovered in Arkansas.
And Cornell is the essentially the home base of the American Ornithologists Union. And
the Cornell lab is legendary. It's the one of the preeminent ornithology labs in the world. And so when Cornell says we found the ivory bill, people take that seriously and listen. And so they conducted a number of searches based on sightings that they, either by their staff or people that they believed. And they had a series of sightings that they believe were good. And
credible. So they're
credible.
In 2004.
And they never were able to get good photos or good video. There is a famous among the birding community video called the Luno video that shows this blurred split second footage of a big black and white woodpecker flushing off of a cypress tree and disappearing into the forest, and that's the hard evidence that some people are still put their belief in or point to as the proof.
Well, let's take a little break here. This is KHOI Community Radio 89.1. We're visiting with Aaron Breeze, a preeminent birder, not only in Iowa, but across the nation and around the world. Aaron works with our legal department, with the Department of Natural Resources, and we're learning about the ivory-billed woodpecker, a tract of timber on the Mississippi Flyway, approaching 1,000 square miles. I mean, this is a big tract of timber, and these birds are somewhat shy and elusive and somewhat mythical. There have been reports throughout the decades, and yet in 2004, Bobby Harrison came back with the story of Lord God Almighty, I've seen the bird. And to bring the listeners kind of up to speed, then Cornell University, essentially the ornithological lab, Cornell, hired some birders And I understand you were one of those people.
I was part of one of their volunteer teams. They had a, basically what they did was they hired a kind of small full-time crew to lead the lead searches, and then they reached out to birders across the country to come work as volunteers for 2-week periods, and this was in the winter of 2005-2006, so the year following the first flurry of sightings.
So you were able to go into these vast woodland areas, riparian, essentially, floodplain associated with the Mississippi River. Well, what were what was your thoughts that first day?
I was extremely excited, although by the time my group got there, you know, they'd been looking for a while, and it seemed like the sightings had kind of dried up. But being new on the ground there, we were all still very excited
and hopeful.
And yeah. Right. And at the same time, you didn't really know what was going on, because
right.
there was a lot of secrecy involved. And
now, why would...
We've been listening to Aaron Breeze, a birder here in Iowa, central Iowa primarily, but known around the world, and was able to go in and look for the ivory-billed woodpeckers in Arkansas. About a decade ago, they're still hoping that these birds can be turning up, but it's quite a story with wings, if you will, that we'll enjoy. As soon as there's other sightings, we'll revisit this topic. So thank you, Aaron Breeze.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you for the explanation of how to feed the woodpeckers in the winter. And again, we'll put that recipe on the website. Suet and peanut butter and bacon grease.
Yeah.
And
cornmeal. Yeah.
And cornmeal. So as we head into 2016 together, we do wish you a happy new year. And it's also the first Friday of the month. And therefore, Susan Guiasta, Ames Public Relations Officer, is here with us. She's joined us. Welcome, Susan, and happy new year.
Yeah, happy new year to you, and good morning.
Okay, so let's talk about Ames.
Oh, there's so much to talk about, as usual, beginning of a new year and a new month.
Does Ames make New Year's resolutions?
The city as a whole, we're going to make 2016 better than 2015.
Okay.
Continuous improvement is always our motto.
Spoken like a good public relations officer. Okay, so what's going on?
Well, as the holidays kind of come to a close, a lot of people are looking for ways to get rid of their Christmas tree. We have a recycling option. If you're interested, you can take your live, no longer needed, Christmas tree to the Parks and Recreation Maintenance Facility, which is what I call is the bottom of the sledding hill, or the cemetery hill on 13th Street, on East 13th Street. It is on the south side of the street. It's marked with a sign. And you can dump your old Christmas tree during daylight hours. We will mulch that up, and we will use it for our parks in the spring.
So it will go to good use.
Absolutely. It will go to great use.
Okay.
It will be recycled.
Great.
Some other things that are happening, as we were discussing earlier, we sort of got an end-of-the-year bonus in that the Breckenridge attorneys from Breckenridge – I'm going to try to get their name right – Breckenridge Ames Iowa Land LLC, I believe is the proper name, have dismissed their lawsuit against the city of Ames. It was a part of a settlement agreement that was determined in the summer, and they had until both parties were working towards steps that were required of that settlement, and it was to be settled by January 15th. So it was sort of a nice bonus to find out that it was dismissed at the end of the year, December 31st, 2015.
And this was a suit about a housing development project.
It was a zoning
west of town.
Right. It was a zoning disagreement on what used to be the former middle school property in what kind of West Ames along State and Lincoln Way Mortensen's three parcels of property in that area. As the process worked its way out, the south part of the property was sold back to Iowa State. The north part of the property was retained by the developer for a mixed-use residential commercial property that they project that they want to move forward on. And interestingly, the city purchased the middle property with community development block grant funds for use for development into an affordable owner-occupied housing project.
So now the suit has been
dismissed.
Dismissed. The whole thing has come to resolution, a clean slate.
Right. So that will move forward. That will allow those properties to be developed. Iowa State has said that they will not develop their property, so it will remain in its passive state. And I would think in 2016 you'll see progress being made on those other two parcels, both the middle parcel and the north parcel.
Okay.
So that's good news. We did have snow recently. It ended up being a white Christmas
All. Yes. Ames looked postcard beautiful.
Yeah, it was sort of a surprise. I think it caught a lot of people off guard. We had people that were heading out of town for the season, some of our snow plow people, and they turned around and came back. Wow. So we had lots of crews out, and as you can see, the snow is still with us. So we'd like to just remind citizens of their obligations when it snows. Ames is a community that uses all sorts of modes of transportation. So in addition to the city getting to work and cleaning the streets, we need property owners to make sure that their sidewalks are clear. So the rule on that is that 10 daylight hours after the cessation of the last snowfall is when your sidewalks should be cleared. So if the snowfall doesn't stop till 6 p.m., you have 10 daylight hours, so you pretty much have the next day to make sure that that walk gets cleared. And it's really important to clear your sidewalk. I can tell you that I was walking on Christmas Day, and the number of footprints that I walked across, because people are walking their dogs, I was actually going from one house to another. This was my mode of transportation for the day. I saw that there were bike tracks on the in the snow. We just need to be cognizant that while some people are out for health reasons or walking a dog, other people are – this is how they get around town. So we need to make sure that those modes of transportation are safe for everybody, and that's one of the reasons that sidewalk ordinance is in place. Please clear those walks. We get reports that walks are not cleared, and it is a complaint-driven scenario. So if you walk regularly and you notice that there are walks that are not clear and they're becoming dangerous, you certainly should call the City of Ames. You can report those online. You can send an email to snowwalks, it's all one word, snowwalks@city.ames.ia.us. You can call in and report that. We have a snow desk. It doesn't always have somebody at the snow desk, so you often have to leave a message. If there are streets or sidewalks that you feel that are dangerous, call that number, 239-5543, and leave a message.
Repeat that number.
239-5543 is the snow desk.
The snow desk to report snow problems.
You can report snow problems there. And also, you can go on our website to cityofames.org/snow, and you can get all the information. It has... the numbers, the email addresses, even information about if your vehicle's been towed. We get a lot of inquiries about the snow ordinance at this time of year and why vehicles have to move off the streets. And it's for plowing purposes. Obviously, it's much more difficult to plow around parked vehicles than it is to just plow curb to curb. So if you park your vehicle along a snow route, which is marked by a red and white sign, once the snow ordinance is in effect, and the snow ordinance goes into effect when 2 inches of snow has fallen in Ames, you need to move your vehicle to a non-snow ordinance street or a non-snow route street, and you have to keep your vehicle off the street until the street's been plowed from curb to curb. So we try to make it very obvious that the snow ordinance is in effect. We put it on our website. We put it out on social media. It goes out on our cable channel 12. We send it to local media for them to release as well. And then the other information about long-term parking in the street, we have difficulty this time of year. Students who leave their vehicles for 2 and 3 weeks on the street and come back and expect the vehicle. They're surprised the vehicle's no longer there. The streets are not long-term storage. I mean, it's just simply put, it's not a parking lot. And
Unpleasant surprise.
We clean streets regularly. Cars that are left on the street for long periods of time are considered abandoned vehicles. They can leak oils and grit. And we want to make sure that vehicles are functioning. And so we ask people to move their vehicles off the streets. Even if you use the street to park an additional car, it is not a parking lot. You have to move it regularly, and this ensures that streets are not used for long-term parking. Mm-hmm.
Susan, one question. If somebody reports a snow – well, first of all, the cleaning of the snow mm-hmm. on the sidewalks, that applies to businesses as well as
Absolutely.
Residents?
Absolutely, yes, the property
How
owner.
How about little icy patches that are I fell flat on my back just outside KHR last winter.
Outside this building?
Well, not quite. I mean, on my way here.
I think you
Not our building. On my way here.
I think you need. So, yeah, that is the responsibility of the property owner, and that is a liability that they would have if their walks are not properly maintained. So
what happens if somebody reports it to the snow? What does the city do?
Yeah, it's complaint driven, so the city goes and inspects. So the first, it isn't we immediately cite people. It is once an address has been reported, we send an inspector. And it sometimes by the time the inspector gets there, it's been cleared. If it's not cleared, it's posted. Basically, the owner is notified. There's been a complaint about your property. You need to clear your walk. And it gives the rules. You can't just take
– Posted mean they put a sign up on your door?
Yep.
Okay.
You cannot just take a shovel and clear a 1.5-foot path or a 2-foot mm-hmm. path or whatever the width of. Some people try to just get by with a little skinny path through the sidewalk. You have to clear the entire sidewalk. Mm-hmm. It has to be free of ice, mm-hmm. Free of things that would make it dangerous for somebody to go across it. So they're given 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the inspector comes back in 24 hours and it's not clear, the city will clear it. And we will send the person the bill plus administrative costs. And those costs, if the city clears your walk for you, the costs range from $75 to $150.
Okay.
So most people would find it more reasonable to clear it themselves. But
mm-hmm. So if you want the city to clean your walk for you, it's going to cost you about $100.
It could cost it's based on how long the sidewalk
mm-hmm.
is. So
okay.
you really want to get it cleared yourself. Yeah. And we do give you time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If it snows again in that time period, there's a whole situation where we inspect and repost.
Mm-hmm.
There are extenuing circumstances. We do find that somebody has been hospitalized, something has happened, and mm-hmm. Then those people need to contact the city. But ultimately, a property owner must make sure that the sidewalk in front of their property or the side of their property is maintained, and that is done for the safety of the entire community.
Absolutely.
I don't have any sidewalks where I live, so I'm safe.
Well, that does happen. I'm a proponent for more sidewalks.
And again, just I know we're slowing you down here, but can you just repeat again just real quickly where the trees go? If people want to bring their trees to the city, where exactly?
And I wish I had the address with me, but it is on East 13th Street, at the bottom of the Cemetery Hill on the south side of the street, and it will be marked. It's the Ames Parks and Recreation Maintenance Shed.
Okay.
And so you should be able to see that during daylight hours. Go ahead, pull your vehicle in, toss your Christmas tree. It's well marked, and they will mulch it later on for the parks.
Okay. Thank
okay?
you. All right. So what's next?
Well, I think it's New Year's, and a lot of people have great intentions of getting in shape. So I just wanted to put in a plug for our Parks and Recreation fitness classes. They're signing up this right now for the new sessions. You can get information on the Parks and Recreation website, which is a direct link, amesparkrec.org. It'll take mm-hmm. you right to a section that will allow you to sign up for fitness classes. You can set up an account. I like to think that our Parks and Recreation classes are at convenient times. They're moderately priced, and you can this week, I think you still have this coming weekend. We're just at the beginning of the year. You can do usually between Christmas and New Year's. They do a little drop-in and try out your fitness classes, but we have gentle yoga, cross training. We even have classes that will help you train for marathons, half marathons, personal training. This is just a lot of this is the time of the year that people have great intentions, mm-hmm. and we want to help them achieve their goals. So fitness, I think Ames is a great community for encouraging physical fitness, and the city of Ames plays a role in that through our fitness classes. They're offered at the community center, which is also City Hall. There's an aerobics room. There's some training rooms. And
there's a Zumba party.
Oh, yes, there is the Zumba party. Thank you for reminding me. Coming up this coming weekend, the 3rd, 1 to 2 p.m. You don't even have to register. Just drop in and check out Zumba. They call it a dance party. and should be a lot of fun. If you've ever, have you ever taken a Zumba class?
No.
Have you seen them?
I did take one. Yeah.
Is it fun?
It's fun and it is a workout. You are basically dancing. And they don't spend a lot of time teaching you the moves. You just kind of have to watch everybody else. And everybody kind of does their own thing. So you cannot be self-conscious if you take these classes. You have to just be wanting to go in there and having some fun. Uh-huh. And they really are fun. Of course, through this week, as the city is offering these drop-in fitness classes, they are collecting donations of non-perishable food. They drop those off to food pantries, and it's kind of a nice way to take a fitness class, try one out, go to the Zumba party, drop off some canned goods, help somebody else out who needs a little help this time of year, and get a head start on your New Year's resolutions. It's really a win-win for everybody. So we have those. That's your indoor, some other indoor recreational opportunities. Ames ISU Ice Arena has public skating hours throughout January. You can find those schedules.
And where is the ice arena?
The ice arena is located off Mortensen Road. I like to say it for people who've been in Ames for a while, behind the towers.
Okay.
So it's by the – what's for the real old-timers, it's by the old Ames Country Club.
That's right. Right. Ames Country Club.
Yeah, which yep. is
– by sort of the back of the disc golf.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's off Mortensen Road, if you can find that, by the new Hanson Ag Facility. So that's another way to be able to locate it. There's the ice arena. There is the municipal pool has public swim hours through January, so you can stay fit by doing some lap swimming. Also, the community center has open gym, so and there is a weight room in there, so you can get some exercise, playing some basketball. They have nets up at certain times of the day, and then they have just a lot of activities going on.
And again, that's in the City Hall building.
City Hall mm-hmm. building. Yeah. And then outdoors, obviously, we encourage people to experience the parks all seasons of the year. And East River Valley is groomed for cross-country skiing. And actually, one of our city council members, City Council Member Tim Garten, has trying to really rally interest in cross-country skiing. And we'll be hosting cross-country skiers on Sunday. Mm-hmm. To go out and enjoy East River Valley trails. So if you've never tried cross-country skiing, it's been a while for me. I do have the skis. I try to get out. It's a great exercise. I don't think you realize how much exercise it is until you're out there pumping away, getting the blood flowing. And I don't like to be cold, but you get warm pretty fast.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a great opportunity. Again, just if you're not into skiing, Ada Hayden, you can walk Ada Hayden. There's trails through all the various parks within Ames. It's really a beautiful time of year to experience the parks. Very quiet. You're not going to necessarily run into a lot of other people. You get a different perspective on the area. In fact, just driving in today, I saw quite a few deer, and you will see those in the parks as well. Very pretty. Some other things we can talk about. As you know, the city is served by about 18 boards and commissions.
Mm-hmm.
We have various Ames residents who volunteer to serve on boards like the Library Board of Trustees, the Parks and Recreation Commission. And one of our commissions right now has a vacancy, somebody who just moved out of the area. So the ZBA, Zoning Board, has a vacancy. And that does a lot of with appeals of property tax, appeals of when you're trying to add on to your home or you have some kind of zoning issue.
So if somebody is hearing this and thinking, well, am I the right person for that? What should one ask oneself to
sure.
decide if one's the right candidate?
ZBA does not deal with property tax. I've just realized I said something wrong. ZBA deals with zoning issues.
Uh-huh.
And so if you're interested, and that's not the only board and commission we have, many of the terms expire mm-hmm. in April. They are on staggered terms. But every year, about this time of year, we ask people to consider putting their name forward to serve on not only ZBA, but some of the other various boards and commissions. They can go to our website, and there is a write-up on all the different boards and commissions.
Mm-hmm.
You can find that by going to cityofames.org/cityclerk. The city clerk actually is sort of – the coordinator of all those boards and commissions, and that office does take the applications. There's an online application. There's also an application you can print if mm-hmm. you don't want to fill it out online, or you can contact the city clerk's office and ask them to send you an application, mm-hmm. and they can mail you one and you can mail it back in. But we try to match residents with maybe areas of interest. There's public art. There's commission on the arts. There's a lot of different boards and commissions that touch on different areas. If you're a skilled tradesperson, you might be interested in some of the skilled trade boards. Sometimes we need people with electric experience or plumbing experience to serve on a board. We have a human relations commission that asks for people with skills in the law. Maybe lawyers or investigators. Mm-hmm. So we're always in need of volunteers. The only criteria is you need to be an Ames resident, have an Ames address, and be 18 years of age or older.
Okay.
And again, you can find those on our website, cityofames.org/cityclerk.
Okay. And the new city council people have been seated?
We had our swearing-in ceremony for our new city council person, Brahman Beatty Hansen. That happened on December 23rd. In addition, we swore in our two incumbents who came back. That was Chris Nelson and Tim Garten. Mm-hmm. So we have a full slate of council members, and that is our new council as of today, okay. January 1st.
Okay. Well, thank you. We've been speaking with Ames Public Relations Officer Susan Guiazda for our monthly check-in. And thank you, Susan, for going above and beyond this morning on a holiday to come in.
Well, it was a beautiful morning to come in.
It is. It's very beautiful. Yeah. And we really appreciate always when you come in. It's great. And, Pat, you want to start closing
the
show?
Well, thank you for your service to the Ames community, Susan.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Yeah. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we have been your host today, Kay Puttick, Ursula Rundberg, and I am Pat Schlarbaum. And thank you for joining us. Earlier in the hour, we spoke with Aaron Breeze about the ivory-billed woodpeckers. And at the top of the hour, we got New Year's Day advice from therapist and coach Keith Schrag, Kay Berger, who is a retired therapist, and Reverend Kent McCusick, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames.
You can hear recording of today's show online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it later today. The posting will include links to all of the online events and resources that were mentioned during the show, where to get rid of your Christmas trees and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. This show has been engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Thank you, Jonah.
Thank you.
And Happy New Year. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Please remember that you as the listener are the most important part of KHOI through your participation as the audience. Thank you for being with us during the year of 2015, and we look forward to 2016. And spending it with you as well. And thank you to your donations during the past season and wonderful letters of support that we've received from you. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio. And
Happy New Year!